listening to the Transform Your Nutrition Podcast with your hosts, Rebecca Heald and Jeff Ash. Our purpose is to help individuals and families transform their relationships with food and develop healthy bodies, minds, and attitudes, all without restriction, guilt, or shame. All right. Well, hey, good morning. I guess it's good afternoon to you where you're at.
It is good afternoon, and it's snowing where I'm at.
Oh yeah, well, we just are cold here, so we don't even get the benefit of the nice pretty snow. It's just kind of cold. Of course, it's not super cold. I'm just kind of a wimp. It's Texas. It's probably 40 something degrees here. So,
well, I just have to say, by the way, sorry, my son Leo. They talk about you all the time now, by the way. And he said to me, he's drawing. He's obsessed at the minute with drawing maps of the world, and he drew North America. Last week, and he put Texas on it. He was asking me where Texas is, and he drew it, and he put Texas. That's where Jeff is, Mom.
Yeah, yeah, that big, huge area down there at the bottom. Yeah, well, that's cool.
Yeah,
so our topic today, what we're going to be talking about is somewhat, well, it's just another aspect of child and family nutrition, and it's going to be related to those young athletes in our family. So whether they're an elite level athlete from that perspective, or just a kid who is just very physically active, involved in a lot of kind of different kinds of sports or physical activity at kind of more than maybe above average level. And so I thought this would be a great topic to discuss. It's very, very common for parents to have concerns, questions, interest in this particular area, kind of how they can address these kinds of nutritional needs and requirements with their kids. You know, sometimes they're getting pressure from different sources, coaches, fellow athletes, the media, all of these things. And so thought this would be a wonderful thing to discuss.
Yeah, definitely.
So before we dive into the specifics about things related to athletes, why don't you go ahead and kind of summarize the division of responsibility that we've talked about again, which is sort of the foundation of a lot of the nutritional approaches that we take when we're talking about kids and teens.
Yeah, because I think it's also it's important to remember that this isn't just something that you should be using with your young children. The division of responsibility is something that carries all the way through. Obviously, the younger that you do, begin to apply it, the easier it gets, and it does make some of the things that we're going to talk about right now a lot easier to tackle, I think. But yeah, division of responsibility, well, in its basic form, is, you know, as parents, we are responsible for providing the structure. We are responsible for providing what and when our children eat. And then children or adolescents are responsible for how much and whether or not they do eat those foods. That makes sense.
Right. Yeah, that's just a great simple concept. Now, applying it is another story. That can be very difficult because we have to trust our children that they're going to eat an appropriate amount of food, that they're not going to starve themselves, that they know what their body needs, and that they're going to be able to provide that. And what we know from research and experience is that, in fact, kids are actually really good at eating an appropriate amount of food for themselves if we don't mess up the process, if we don't disrupt it in some way through pressure or restriction or shame or all those different things that's so easy for us as parents to do in an attempt to help our kids grow up in the most healthy way possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing to really, really kind of bear in mind is that children need structure, okay? They need structure and they need routine, but they don't need restriction. They don't need forcing. We do not need to control their food. You know, we need to let their bodies guide them and trust them. You know, and that's what it all comes down to. It's about really encouraging our children to be as intuitive and in tune with their bodies as possible. And and then obviously that is a life skill. It's something that they take with them through adolescence, through adulthood, so that they can have a healthy relationship with their food and their body. Because when we're not trusting our bodies, we don't necessarily have, and we'll probably go into this about body image, etc. But when we're trusting our bodies and listening to our bodies, our own body image, our self-esteem is so much more improved as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's so important that we are also setting up an environment that allows them to do this in a successful way. So we can't expect them to eat the right amount of food for their body if we aren't providing them with enough food or with enough food that they can actually tolerate and stomach. We also don't want to force them into eating things that they just do not like or that that cause them distress in some way, because, you know, when we're forcing them to eat a certain amount of food, certain types of food, never allowing them to enjoy food, then we can develop that that negative relationship with food also. And so I think these are really important things that we address first before we even start to give a second thought to considerations for their athletic performance. I think a lot of times parents skip over that. It's really easy for us to skip over that and say, okay, my kid is an athlete. What's the best diet for them? How can I optimize their nutrition to benefit their performance? Their coach says they need to lose weight. This would be a common thing in gymnasts and that kind of thing. Yeah. We probably hear that more in female related sports, unfortunately, I would think, especially if there are male coaches involved. Sometimes us guys are a little less sensitive to that, and we can kind of be a little bit too, you know, cut and dry as far as, well, if you were smaller, then you could do this better, and rather than considering the entire person.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really, really important point that you've made as well, because it's the environment that we're in and the messages mm-hmm. that we're receiving that often do lead to poor relationship with foods. Lead to a poor relationship with food. And, you know, I think if we are establishing this, if we're helping our children to become competent eaters, to trust their bodies, to listen to what their bodies are telling them, then they can become much more resilient to that kind of environment and those kind of messages.
Yeah. Well, I think that leads into a good place to start kind of the conversation around some of the specific considerations for these very highly active kids. So the first place I think that we need to start is energy availability. I mean, that's the fundamental reason that we eat food, right? Is to provide energy for our body. And so aside from macronutrient content, sugar content, micronutrients and vitamins and minerals and all that, if we're not providing our bodies with enough energy to do the various activities that we're involved in, then our body is not going to function properly. So when it comes to energy availability, how does that fit in with this division of responsibility?
Well, exactly that, isn't it? You know, as long as we are providing, the thing is that we need to make sure that we're providing regular opportunities for our children to eat. That's one of the, mm-hmm. the key things as well, that we're, you know, we're making sure that our children are aware of that, because once children are used to this structure as well, they begin to trust. It's a mutual trust, isn't it, between parent and child as well, because they trust that if they they're not going to go too long without having another meal or another snack, if that makes sense. But obviously our children, you know, they know how much is enough. They know what they need to feel good. They know instinctively how to eat. So as long as we are providing those opportunities and we are providing, we are modeling appropriate behaviors, and we are making sure that we are providing food that is nutritious and valuable for our children, then they will, and then as long as we're not demonizing or restricting foods, then they will, you know, they'll do what is best for them, what is right for them in terms of, you know, of their physical health, but also their emotional health as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's just such an important aspect of that. And that structure is a great way to ensure that our kids are getting enough energy for their various activities. And as parents, what we can do is, we're not saying let our kids eat whenever they want. That's not what we mean by allowing them to decide how much and whether they're going to eat. As a parent, our job is to understand the nutritional needs of our kids, the activities that they're involved in. Of course, as they get older, they're going to start making some of those decisions more for themselves. But in general, that's our job. And so we say, okay, well, my kid has sports practice at this particular time each day? How am I going to structure our meals around that so that they have plenty of energy before the activity and after? So when it comes to, maybe we have some good knowledge of general sports nutrition. And so we understand that they need to have protein and they, the importance of some kind of a meal after their training occurs to help with recovery and maybe the makeup of that meal. What we can do then as a parent is plan out those meals and set them up in such a way so that our child has their breakfast, they have their snack, they have their lunch at their somewhat scheduled times. They go to their, they have a, another snack before their practice on practice days, maybe on non-practice days. They don't need that other snack beforehand. And so we don't have to provide that. Maybe we do, maybe we don't. That's, again, that's going to be dependent on the individual situation. But then they have their practice and we provide that meal afterward. And so by doing that, by having that structure rather than just a free-for-all with nutrition, we also are going to be setting them up for a better outcome with their athletic performance. Because when we're optimizing for an athlete or for performance reasons, a lot of it comes down to those little details like that. They can make a big difference. You know, I had a client recently who was, she eats intuitively, but she was experiencing a lot of delayed onset muscle soreness after her training. And it didn't make sense based on the volume that she would be that sore after the period of time. And so I just said, why don't you incorporate more protein in each of your meals and that, and let's see if that helps. And it did. That was all that was needed. So as a parent, that could be something that we need to do too, is think about, it may be energy availability. You know, we're talking about that first here. So it may be that we just need to provide a bit more energy density at some of those snack times around the training times and just set our kids up for success. So we're not forcing them to eat it. We're not saying you have to eat this amount, but we're just making it very easy for them to naturally nourish their body in the way that, that they intuitively feel is needed.
Absolutely. I think, you know, that's there's so many, you know, relevant points that you've made there. And I think as well, if children are used to that structure, if children are used to that routine, they are more likely to take those snacks, take those foods, mm-hmm. eat those meals when you provide them. Whereas if we're allowing our children to just eat whenever they want, you know, oh, do you want something to eat now after your training? You should do, really. And they're like, no, it's all right, because they know that they can have something in an hour or 2 hours' time. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if we are, if we've got that structure in place, it's helping them, it's setting them up, like you say, for success moving forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things that is that we often overlook too is what is the long-term effect of what we're doing as a parent on their eating. So it's one thing to do something that works right now, but it's another thing to do something that works now, but also sets them up for success when their activities change. So you think about maybe an elite level college athlete. Well, during that period of time while they're in college, maybe they have certain needs, but what happens when they graduate and they don't go on to play professionally or anything, they just go into a sedentary work environment. How are they going to continue on with that, those healthy habits and behaviors in such a way that's going to help them to maintain a good, healthy body? If we have them on following a way of eating and that doesn't really set them up for success in just normal day-to-day life, when they stop their athletic career, there can be problems afterward. We could have set them up for disordered eating patterns and all kinds of negative consequences, or overeating. You know, it's one thing when you just let a kid pretty much free for all eat when they are having 2-a-day practices. But then when those stop, if they're in this habit of just free for all eating with no structure in place, then they're going to just start packing on the weight.
And I have had this with clients where, you know, they've got into the habit of just eating, you know, because they can, you know, mm-hmm. and then obviously their energy requirements have changed, but the habits haven't. So, and that's always what we've got to be thinking as well, isn't it? We've always got to be thinking in the long term. We've always got to be thinking about how the impact of how we're modeling things for our children, you know, runs out or plays out in the long run, if that makes sense. And
definitely.
And what you said before as well about making sure, I think that was the point I tried to make initially, but probably not quite as eloquently as you did though there, Jeff, but you know, about making sure that their meals and their snack times have the nutrients, have the things that their bodies need to refuel and repair, but then we don't force them upon them. We just make them available, and we make available adequate amounts that we know that they need, but then we trust them to get what it is that they, and you've got to remember as well, if your child is new to this, it's going to take some experimentation. It's going to take them some time to get used to it and some time to, but if you are allowing your child to listen to their body and to trust their body, then it should, you know, it should happen quite quickly and quite easily.
All right, so this brings up another important topic that is really common in female athletes especially. So I think it's something worth pointing out here specifically, and that's something called relative energy deficiency in sport, or REDS. And this is something, it's also called the female athlete triad, and it's characterized by things like menstrual dysfunction, low energy availability, and that could be with or without an eating disorder involved, and then decreased bone mineral density. And so these are important these are negative consequences when we don't provide enough energy for, in particular, our females. Of course, our males will experience other things too as well, impacts on hormones like testosterone and other things within the body. But in particular, this is one of the most common things that I would say parents need to be aware of, especially if they have a very serious young female athlete who may be getting pressure from obviously media to not gain weight, to keep a very slender figure, maybe from coaches in general, especially if it's a sport where a slimmer body does tend to perform better. Think gymnastics, maybe rock climbing is another one that's popular now with the competitive climbing, other things like that where they're getting those outside influences on their body weight. And so now they're thinking maybe that focus is on maintaining their body weight, keeping it below a certain level rather than fueling their activity. And then as a result, this particular condition can develop. And it's actually much more common than it should be, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, and I think what you're touching on there as well kind of touches on disordered eating, and I do think, you know, I mean, you talk about young females and young males. I do think, you know, it's really important to point out, like you did, that it is something that does affect both male and females. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you said, the pressure, which we touched on before, the pressure, the external pressure, not just to perform, but also to look a certain way,
right,
then can lead to, like you say, adolescents, young people trying to control their intake to do that, to be able to be the best. And I think one of the things as well, which is really important to bear in mind amongst our athletes, is very often that, you know, they have traits of perfectionism. Mm-hmm. Okay. They want to be the best that they can be. They're dedicated, they're committed. And, you know, that again can be, a personality trait that lends itself sometimes to eating disorders, to disordered eating. And I think, you know, it is something that we really do need to bear in mind. And I think it's something like 20%, I'm sure it's about 20%. Athletes are 20% more likely to develop an eating disorder because of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. That's a great point with it. It kind of brings it back to the fact that nutrition is not just about food. There are so many factors involved, and especially with kids, because they're trying to develop their identity. They don't necessarily understand all of the factors involved. They may not be thinking long-term as far as their health and well-being. And so that's, again, that brings it back to our job as parents, is to help them navigate that, help set up that structure, which can be really challenging when a lot of us as parents don't even have our own eating together. And so it can be really difficult when we're trying to do that for our kids. But I think that that, again, that highlights the importance of this division of responsibility concept as kind of a foundation for all of this. And that's if we can do our, that take care of those fundamentals, then a lot of these other things are sort of addressed in that process.
Yeah, and I think you've made a really important point there as well, Jeff, about, yes, the division of responsibility, you know, does help to address much of this. And the sooner you start with that, the better. I mean, I've seen that even with my own children.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is, which you mentioned about, you know, a lot of parents themselves haven't always got it together with their own eating. So it's okay, you know, it's all well and good, you know, establishing this division of responsibility if you're not then going to model the behaviors yourself. I think that's something to really bear in mind, and it's something I'm definitely mindful of, you know, around my children. Not that I'm by any means perfect, I'm not, but I think you've also got to model, you know, the best eating behaviors that you can, because our children, you know, they pick up, that's how they learn. They pick up from watching us. They watch what we eat. They watch how we eat. So, you know, I think that, that it's really important that that is really not forgotten as well in the drive to make sure that we are providing the structure and the adequate food and the environment. Well, a massive part of the environment is modeling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really one of the best things that we can do for our kids is really work on better modeling the behaviors that we're hoping that they develop. They're not going to develop those habits and behaviors if it's not being modeled for them. If we're undermining it at home, if we're undermining it through our own habits and behaviors, they're going to be seeing that. We can't expect them to incorporate that. So I would say one of the best things, you know, if you're looking for tips on what you can do to help your young athlete, one of the best things is to get that framework and structure in place and model those behaviors yourself. So that, you know, some people, their motivation is, hey, I want to get into a particular size dress. I want to lose X amount of pounds. Maybe your motivation could be helping your kids to become, to not develop some of the habits and behaviors that you developed yourself. And so maybe use that as a little bit of a motivation for your own health and fitness journey. Often we get focused in on just ourselves. I want to fit into this size dress. I want to lose this amount. I want to be able to do this and that. Nothing wrong with that. Perfectly fine. But what about, you know, our kids? So many of us as parents, we are very, very concerned with our kids and how they are developing. And so use that motivation, feed off of that also for your own health and fitness journey.
It's funny you should say that, because I've got two or three clients that exactly came to me for that reason.
Oh, that's cool. So
they've got a lot of my clients are parents, but there's two in particular, I think, who have young children. Under two, and when they came to me, that was it. There was like, you know, my eating problems are becoming more and more apparent, and I do not want my children to have the same issues. And so that was a massive motivation for them. But also as well, what the point you just made then, I mean, I was in a coaching session this morning, and one of my clients, she has got weight loss goals. Okay, she does want to get to a certain, you know, to a certain size, but she at one point she was so overwhelmed by that and focusing so heavily on that, but she was getting nowhere. She was going round and round in circles. And since we have done exactly what you've said, we've got her to refocus and think about, you know, the habits that she's actually trying to establish, and, you know, and the behaviors that she wants to encourage in her own son. She has found, and she's relaxing around the weight and what that looks like. She has found that actually she's making progress, and she's losing the weight, and she's feeling better, and she's got more energy. So, I'm going to have to cut that bit out.
Yeah. So no, those are fantastic points, and I think that just again just emphasizes the importance of considering the entire family in the context of all of this also. So one of the, we had some questions.
You're probably going to achieve your goals.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. And you know, we often tell people, hey, don't focus so much on the scale goals. Let's shift our thinking to maybe a performance related goal, that kind of thing. So again, you could shift your thinking more to how are my habits and behaviors impacting my kids? Am I seeing an improvement in them in these changes? And maybe if not, maybe focus the attention there. It's amazing when we have things in line, when we have the foundations in place, we often don't even have to worry about the other things. And so that kind of brings me to a question that came up from one of our listeners. They were asking about fat loss. So they were asking, is a rapid fat loss approach okay with young people? And so I thought that would be a good question to answer. We had a few questions, and so we'll go ahead and kind of shift over to some of the questions that came in. But that was kind of one that I think would be a good first one. So is a rapid fat loss approach, we know that in research in adults, it is has been shown to be a very effective way for some people to lose weight and actually even maintain it. So these extremely aggressive, very low calorie diets can be effective in certain contexts, especially people with clinical issues like diabetes or other conditions. Would those be appropriate for kids? And if so, why? And if not, which I already know the answer, why not?
Okay. I mean, I don't think, you know, children are, they're still developing. They are still growing. You know, I don't think it would ever be appropriate. I don't know if I'm wrong here, but, you know, I don't think ever a fast fat loss approach, not even any approach that focuses on so explicitly on weight loss is healthy for children. Mm-hmm. I think if we are, again, going back to this structure and this routine and allowing children to be in tune with their bodies and trust their bodies, they will naturally fall at the weight that is right for them. And I think, you know, often the issues occur when we try to restrict foods or limit foods, and then children and you know, young children, young adults, then potentially are overeating what is necessary for them because of, you know, because we are limiting those. So I think it just goes back again for me to the division of responsibility. And yeah, it's just, I don't know how you feel about that.
Jeff? Yeah, definitely. I completely agree on rapid fat loss. That's just not something to use with kids. Now, are there clinical exceptions? Probably. We're not talking about the extreme exceptions where you have a physician involved and there's maybe some specific clinical condition around that kid. But in general, if you have a kid who's a little chubby or even a lot chubby, forcing them or encouraging them or focusing in on them changing their body weight as the end goal and it is really not healthy, and it's not going to have the desired outcome. So we see in research that when we use restriction with kids especially, that it has the exact opposite effect. When we have restriction in the diet, kids tend to gain weight. They tend to be heavier when we restrict their diet. But if we use this framework to set them up for success with this division of responsibility, then it's really the best way that we can help them to manage their body weight. Basically, they put on the excess weight because there's some kind of a disruption in the feeding relationship, the feeding process, and where either we're there's stress involved, and so maybe they don't feel like they know when their next meal is coming. Not that we're not feeding our children properly, but they are not consistently aware of when they're going to eat next. And so at a meal, then maybe they're going to eat a lot because they don't want to be hungry in between meals, because they don't know, well, am I going to get a snack today or not? Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I'm just going to eat a whole bunch now. I'm going to eat until I'm really full just to make sure in case I don't get my snack. But then they get their snack too. And now what they've done is they've overeaten more than they needed. And so we've taken out that ability of them to determine how much food they need, that feeling. We've taken that away from them because we've disrupted their schedule, their pattern, and their habits, and kind of set them up for this overconsumption. And the same can happen in underconsumption too.
And I have clients that are still struggling with that now, mm-hmm. because that's something that they experienced in childhood. And, you know, this thing of, you know, clients being completely out of touch with their hunger because they don't ever let themselves get hungry because they're terrified of what will happen, you know, if food is not around. And right. I think just something to I think there's a couple of things I just pointed on what to make there. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I do think, like you say, when feeding patterns are disrupted, it can lead to, you know, overeating in children. I think The other thing to bear in mind, though, as well, is that children do go through stages, you know, and your child mm-hmm. may go through a chubby stage, okay? It's absolutely normal. It's probably, you know, and the thing is we shouldn't compare children with other children. We need mm-hmm. to compare our children with themselves, you know, right. monitor how things are for them. If they have a rapid increase in weight, you know, there are things to look at, but it could just be a phase. It could just be mm-hmm. they're going through that and it's okay, it will balance out. But again, if it's not, you know, it is good to look at, like you say, the pattern of feeding and see whether that's been disrupted. But the other thing also to think about is, again, what you touched on it as well, is, you know, are we raising our children to not be reliant on food to deal with emotions as well?
Right.
You know, because as adults, it's often something that we, you know, we've learned that the only way to cope with our feelings is to soothe ourselves with food. If every time our child is upset, we soothe them with food, we spoke about this before, then, you know, that's always going to be their default mechanism, which again can lead to, you know, it can lead to overeating. Mm-hmm. Because we need to make sure that our children do develop other coping mechanisms to deal with things.
Yeah. And there's so many things involved when you have a growing child, because they could be going through a growth spurt, and it may be that they're putting, that their body needs the additional energy. And as a result, they put on a little bit more body fat until their height catches up, for example, and then that may level off. And so we can't panic when we see, an increase here or there, a decrease here or there, especially with our kids. We want to, obviously, if something goes way out of control, that's different. But in general, if we have those fundamentals in place and we're seeing those fluctuations, that's completely normal. It's to be expected, and we shouldn't panic, and we shouldn't try and force on this fat loss to our kid out of a fear that they're going to continue into adulthood and just get bigger and bigger and bigger, because that's just not, the research doesn't support that. And it really does come back to those habits and behaviors. And so, again, if you do see a problem developing, and it's clear that really a problem has developed, maybe kids are sneaking food, maybe they are really putting on weight very quickly, and you're seeing a problem, address the issue, try and figure out what's the cause of that. The cause of it is not, oh, I just need to not give them as much food. There's a root cause. And so restriction is almost never the option, the answer to a kid whose weight may need to come down for whatever reason.
If a child is sneaking food, if a child is taking food behind your back or sneaking food, the chances are it's because that food's being restricted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's something. So again, it is, oh, you know, my child is taking sweets and eating them in secret. Well, probably because you're restricting them. So maybe you need to incorporate them, offer them sweets alongside other alternatives. Yes, to begin with, they'll probably only take the sweets. But once they know that the sweets are always available, they will trust your children. I can see it in my own children, you know, and I offer them their favorite things, and I offer them, you know, healthier, you know, and they take both, and it balances itself out. Some days I do think, oh, wow, they've eaten quite a lot of sweets today. And then the next day, all they'll eat is fruit, you know, because mm-hmm. children do, they know that too many sweets, they know that too much cake doesn't make them feel good.
Right.
So trust your children. And if your child, if your child does need to lose weight, I'm not saying that, you know, this, don't focus on the weight, like you said. Don't mm-hmm. ever talk about your child's weight or body in a negative way. Just don't. It's going to cause issues further down the line. And I think, unfortunately, as well, it happens, you know, sometimes in schools there's talk about it, which is, you know, it's just not right. And then even if you take your child, I mean, I had a parent who came to me and she said, I took my child to the doctors, and the doctor literally in front of my daughter told me that my daughter had to lose weight because, you know, he was using BMI, I think, as a marker.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just when it's even ingrained within our health system, mm-hmm. you know, and we then, it then undermines us as parents. We're like, oh God, you know, is what my doctor, it's just, sorry, it goes, we could talk about it forever.
No kidding, we could.
I think it's just, you know, the messages, the environment that we live in, society, etc., you know, just confuses us.
Yeah. Well, and again, coming back to this idea with athletes, it often there's even more pressure involved in that because there's performance aspects there. You know, you've got coaches involved who are not necessarily sensitive to body image issues, especially if you got an old school type coach involved who's, you know, suck it up and, you know, this and that. And it's really important, I guess. This may sound like we're avoiding the optimizing your nutrition for athletes, but really, if you take care of these fundamentals, then the other details will kind of fall into place much more easily. I think back to my own days when I was a competitive climber as a older adolescent and young adult, and I very much ate intuitively because I was raised in such a way that set me up for that. And it worked out very well. I had those core concepts in place and that structure. And so it was very natural for me to eat more on days when I needed more, eat less on days when I didn't need as much. And it sort of balanced out. And I think if we focus on those fundamentals, then most of it will take care of itself.
Yeah, and again, the thing is at feeding time, I mean, you know, if at dinner times, my children know they can have seconds. My children know they can eat as much as they need to at dinner time. And they tend to do that because then they know after dinner, that's it. I limit their desserts, you know, I do, you know, that, you know, they'll be like, oh, come on. You know, I do say, no, that's your dessert, that's it. You know, you don't have to finish your dinner to have it, but you're not having six ice creams. Okay.
Right.
Obviously. But if they want more bread, if they want more rice, if they want more pasta, if they want more meat, if they want more vegetables, they can have that as long as I've got it available, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, and that's the thing, make sure that you always make sure that there's plenty of available and then they can eat to their needs. Mm-hmm. And if they know that then it's going to be a good another few hours, and never, you should never go too long without feeding your children. You know, there should never be, you should never go more than 3 or 4 hours without a snack or a meal. It's usually less for mine. They're younger. It's, you know, we're probably looking at every 3 hours. But if they know that they're going to have to wait a couple of hours, 2 or 3 hours till the next time that they will eat, and but not necessarily the little that till is right, is comfortable for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that actually brings us into another question that somebody had asked, which was, is intermittent fasting okay or even good for kids and teens? And what's the best meal timing approach? So I thought that was a great question because intermittent fasting is such a popular concept. And there is research showing that it may be beneficial to overall health and longevity to go extended periods of time without food intake. So what about with kids? You know, there's research showing maybe it's more healthy. What would your take be on intermittent fasting for kids?
Again, it's never an approach I would explicitly, you know, put in place. Mm-hmm. But let's say my child was feeling not very hungry one day and decided that he didn't want his breakfast or decided that he didn't want his morning snack. Fine. If he doesn't want it, I'm not going to pressure him to do so. You know, so naturally, my son, I spoke about this before a few weeks ago. It was his birthday. He ate everything. It was a day when they were allowed to eat what they wanted. Okay. They were allowed, you know, I do that every now and then. Mm-hmm. Okay. The next day, he did not want to eat anything till lunchtime. That was fine. It was okay with me. All right. Personally, I think, you know, especially younger children, I do think that they need to eat regularly. I do think that they need the energy. They're running around all the time. They're growing. So I do like, you know, I think missed opportunities, missed feeding opportunities, I think, you know, if they happen, they will happen because it's naturally how my child is feeling that day or whatever.
Right.
I don't think it's ever anything that I would specifically try to implement if that's, and it's the same with my clients, you know, I say the same, you know, don't use, because I think the thing around intermittent fasting is sometimes it's used as a way of reducing energy intake,
right.
As opposed to, you know, something that suits somebody because their appetite isn't necessarily, you know, but I mean, yeah, there are some benefits and there is some great research around it, definitely. You know, but I think the thing that we've got to bear in mind as well is that, you know, we do it every day anyway, in some way, you know, we do go long periods without eating when we sleep. Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of studies and a lot of that do show that actually having your, if you are going to fast, having your meals in the morning and then fasting later on in the day is beneficial. And I think when you think about it, so children do tend to do that. They tend to sleep longer, mm-hmm. you know? And, but I think, and I think it's, you know, modern society, modern culture doesn't always make that approach practical, does it?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I think it comes down.
I am open-minded. I just, mm-hmm. you know, I think for me, I do think children need to eat regularly to keep their energy levels up. And so I will always offer that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think the reason for intermittent fasting, it would be the important question. So why are you restricting their feeding to a particular time window? You know, we're talking about typically intermittent fasting. Most people are thinking of time restricted feeding where you give yourself a 6 or an 8 hour feeding window. And outside those, you know, that those time constraints, you don't allow for any eating. And I don't know that that's necessarily a problem. If that is how your child has always eaten, if you've always eaten, you know, their breakfast starts at a certain time, their last meal or snack is at a certain time. Within that feeding window, they are getting in all the energy they need. They aren't complaining about being hungry later in the evening. And by hungry, I mean actually feeling hungry as opposed to bored and just wanting to like nibble on something. But if they fit, if it fits within a particular feeding window, and that feeding window is the one that you use yourself, I don't really see a problem with it. I think the problem comes is that often we use this intermittent fasting as a way of restricting our food intake. Yeah, exactly. And especially in diet culture, that's what we're using it for. And if we're doing that with our kids to restrict their food intake, then I think that's where it can become a problem. And so again, like what you said about breakfast, often our kids will sort of intermittent fast in one way or another, or shorten their feeding window based on their energy needs, and that's certainly fine. And I think that it's okay to skip a meal if they, as long as they have the option of eating that meal. And that's, again, that's where it comes down to this division of responsibility. We're not forcing them to eat. If they aren't hungry for breakfast 5 out of 7 days a week, we really shouldn't force them to do that.
I do find that with my son. He's very small. I do find that. But I think the key here is when we make it a rule,
right.
Okay, we make it, I'm only going to let my children eat between like 12 and 8 p.m. You know, it's just our energy needs fluctuate.
Right.
You know? So it's a bit like saying, I'm not going to eat carbs. You know, if you make it a rule, right. Then I think that's when it can become a problem. Whereas if it's something that happens, if it's something, yeah, exactly like you said. And I would say that probably at least once a week, my son doesn't want his breakfast, and it's okay. Right.
Yeah, so I think, so I think the answer to the person that asked this question would basically be, what's your reason for intermittent fasting? If it's the natural way your family eats and everybody is comfortable with it and people are not going around hungry, then using that shorter feeding window may be perfectly fine. But in general, we do find that kids do often need to eat more frequently. And so in general, it's probably not a good idea to implement that.
My eldest would never even skip a snack.
I'm
He's always starving.
Yeah.
He's definitely going through a growth spurt, bless him.
Yeah. Let's see, another one that came up, we're kind of running up toward the end here, but one last one that I thought we would touch on is optimal diet for kids. So how does an optimal diet for a young athlete differ from that of maybe an adult who is an athlete? Or does it differ? And I think we've kind of addressed that question through our whole discussion here, which is, it comes down to energy availability, obviously. As long as you're providing that, that's going to take care of the bulk of it. Protein requirements, kids do have the same protein requirements that adults do based on their body size. So we're talking at least 1.2, but probably 1.6 to 2 grams per kilogram of body mass for a child is, just like with an adult, is going to be a general ballpark recommendation. But when we get down to the nitty gritty details, it can be a problem. So make sure they have protein at every meal. Make sure that they have the option of eating protein at every meal. You're going to take care of it. Yeah.
Make sure there's adequate amounts there.
Exactly.
You know, of good quality protein sources.
Yeah.
You know, around their training, same with carbohydrates, and don't sweat the small stuff, definitely. But I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's good, for children as they get, for adolescents as they get older, to understand. But again, just make it available.
Exactly. And don't overthink it. So you may have been tuning into this episode thinking, oh, I'm going to get all kinds of great tips for my young athlete. And ultimately, the great tips are stick to the basics. Yeah. Now, once you get those basics in place, you can start to look at things like, another question that had come in was talking about creatine supplementation. And, you know, is creatine addiction a thing? And no, it's not. You can't get addicted to it. Creatine is a natural occurring substance in things like meat, and it's important for the body, energy source. And there has been some research done that has shown that it's effective in young people. It's also safe for consumption also. And so parents, if you have a kid who's wanting to supplement with creatine based on maybe what their friends or their coach is suggesting, it's probably fine. Of course, run that by your doctor. But in general, the reason I bring that up is that, yes, this creatine supplementation can be perfectly safe and effective for kids. But again, if you don't have the core fundamentals in place, supplementing with creatine is not going to give you any kind of benefit that you're hoping to get from it. And so really, when for any parent with a young athlete, focusing on these foundations is going to get you the most bang for the buck, ultimately.
Yeah, the only other thing I would just maybe mention about creatine without going into it too much is, you know, just make sure as well that your adolescents are not wanting to do it for body image-ish reasons. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But again, if we are making sure that we're establishing good foundations, if we're encouraging children to trust their bodies, to listen to their bodies, encouraging children to love their bodies, then, you know, these things will just naturally sort themselves out.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, keep an eye out for the future. We may have another episode where we go into maybe some of these more optimal things that you can do for your young athletes, because there certainly are cases where maybe we might want to address the endurance athletes' specific needs or a strength athlete's specific needs, because there are some legitimate considerations in those areas as far as protein intake and timing and recovery and those kinds of things. But as kind of a primer to this topic, I think this has been a great discussion to have around this. And my hope through this, and I know your hope through this too, is that parents will hear this. And if they've been thinking, how can I really optimize my kids' nutrition to get them to move to the next level? You know, the best way you can optimize your kids' nutrition and get them to move to the next level is make sure the foundations are in place. Because I can say with pretty strong confidence that most people listening, and I'm one of these parents, I didn't have the basics in place for my kids at an early age, and and saw the consequences of that. But I think for most parents, you probably need to focus on those basics before you even start thinking about taking the nutrition part to the next level. And understand that often when we start to take nutrition to the next level, we end up introducing a lot of other factors that can really disrupt the foundations, as we've all seen in our own life, where we jump onto a diet and it works for a short time, but it screws up everything else. It screws up the way that we think about food, that we think about our body, because we're fixated on the wrong things. And that same thing can happen when we're overthinking performance nutrition with our kids.
That's just one great point I just want to just end on as well, is that that's exactly the journey I take my clients on. You know, I never start by telling them this will do this for you, protein does this, that is built in. But I start first by helping them establish, you know, routines, establishing, you know, getting rid of any diet rules or any myths or anything. Because if I then start telling them that protein will do this, carbohydrates will do that, X will do that, they then start attaching rules to it straight away. So you've got to work on the mindset first. You've got to be in the right place. We've got to make sure that our children are, you know, like you say, are resilient, are in tune with their bodies, are listening to their bodies. And then you can feed the more specifics into it, definitely.
Yeah, that's such a great point.
Yeah, but we can talk about, if anyone's got any questions that they want us to elaborate on here, that would be great.
Yeah, definitely feel free to reach out. If you do, if you're saying, you know what, I've got those foundations in place, what are some other things? Certainly reach out to us, because we do have some things that we could certainly point you to with regard to very specific interventions. And a lot of times it comes down to the individual person. So what we're talking about here today is sort of this general approach that is going to apply to 100% of parents of athletes. 100% of parents of athletes are going to benefit from putting in place this structure, this foundation, this framework of taking care of energy availability and the basics. But not everybody's going to benefit from worrying about protein timing or creatine supplementation, which those are certainly relevant to some young athletes. But for the bulk of it, if you don't have those, again, those foundations in place, none of the little things are going to matter. And so, I guess that would be a good thing to leave this discussion on. So we hope that you've enjoyed this. Again, feel free to reach out to either of us. You can get the contact information in the show notes. I will actually link also a paper on that creatine supplementation, if anybody is interested in that, since we did mention that, as well as something on REDS, relative energy deficiency in sport, which is a good summary of the issues that specifically female athletes need to be aware of. And as parents, of course, we always want to be involved in our kids' lives. We want to know what's going on in their bodies. Hopefully have a very open communication pathway with our kids, so that if they are going through some of these things, and we can be aware of them and help them navigate those things that may come up throughout their athletic career. So again, we hope that you've had a enjoyable time with this discussion, and we will see you next time.